Hey, welcome back to Matt and Dwight Just Might, a podcast about two Midwest-based comedians figuring it out as they make their way through life, stolen Wi-Fi, and Ramadan. Happy Ramadan, everyone. Happy.
That's a good jump. Stolen Wi-Fi to celebrating a religious holiday.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't celebrate Ramadan, but I do think it's a beautiful thing.
Oh, couldn't agree more. Happy Ramadan to all those that listen.
I think, yes.
Everyone should celebrate a happy Ramadan.
Do we have those stats? Do we have I don't know. I feel like with our conservative government, some of the laws being passed is podcasts. Well, now you have to identify your race every time you click on a podcast, your race, your gender identity, your sexuality. They want all the info. They know whether or not to allow that podcast to continue to exist.
I'd imagine that we're on the more diverse side, but I would like to keep that on down low just because of what you just said. I don't want to end up on the government's hate list.
Yeah. You know what? Let's adopt this whole happy Ramadan thing. Okay. I'm sorry. You all are on your own. Dwight and I have to think about our careers because it's going so well.
Oh man, where are you?
I am in Portland, Oregon. I really thought I was going to be set up in a more stable place to podcast from today. I was going to be staying with my friends Dan and Aaron, but their trip to Bend, Oregon got extended and they won't be getting back until later tonight. So I had a few more days of car camping that I wasn't counting on. So I'm sitting outside of a Starbucks on Martin Luther King Drive. I don't want to blow anybody's mind, but gray and rainy Portland, Oregon.
Oh man, this is so much different than the picture you painted for us last week. Mm-hmm. Inside of your car, outside of a big boy Fringes.
No, it's a Freddy's steak burger. Gotta give respect to the businesses whose Wi-Fi I steal.
Yeah, shout out to Starbucks. I feel like this is the alpha dog of providing Wi-Fi to vagrants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. You know, it's interesting that you get into the vagrant thing because car camping has been the most challenging in Portland because they have such a homeless population here that businesses are like super on guard against it. I guess, okay. I guess they've had their fill and had issues with them or whatever, but like, you know, I usually stay in truck stops, which are usually not right in the heart of the city. They're usually on the outskirts of cities. And the thing that's nice about a truck stop is it's open 24 hours. If I need to use the bathroom in the middle of the night, I can go in, do that, blah, blah, blah. This truck stop I stayed at last night, luckily I got there kind of early because they lock their restrooms between like something like 11 p.m. and 6 a.m. they don't have restrooms.
Man, that's big city shit right there.
Yeah, just like nope. And it's like, but I just filled up my tank of gas. I'm like, I just paid a bunch of money to your truck stop. Like, you don't know I'm sleeping in your parking lot. But I mean, also like, can I get a code? I mean, because almost every place here has codes on the bathrooms, and I don't know why they don't just do that. Just do that.
Yeah, you gotta have the code.
Completely locked down, you know.
Matt trying to pull the fast one, the old fill up your gas tank and then go shoot up drugs in the rest stop bathroom trick. They're not falling for it.
Yep. I don't want to sound like a, you know, talking head on Fox or whatever, but man, definitely Portland is grimy. You know, it is grimy, man. Like I went to a grocery store because I'm running out of my groceries. So I went to like a Safeway. And as I was walking in, a dude was like, not running, but speed walking out. He had like a bandana over his face. He had like walked in, just grabbed a bunch of like bags of fruit and hustled out. And the security guard, you know, it's always a good sign when the grocery store has an armed security guard at the door.
Right.
Is like chasing him out. Not really. You could tell the security guard also like, this isn't really worth getting in an altercation with this kid for a bag of grapes and a bag of orange. But he was just like, yo, you got to take that back. He was yelling at the kid and the kid just kept going. I'm assuming it was a kid. I don't know. It's like they were all bandanded up. I don't know.
They're bandanded up. That's
they were definitely not moving like an old person. They were moving like a young, spry, homeless kid. But I saw that. I've seen just so many different varieties of feces on the sidewalk. It's beautiful Portland, everybody.
This is New York shit right here.
I have a lot of friends that live out here that have lived here for a long time. And I was talking to my buddy Day again. I met up for lunch with him. And he used to work at like a really like fancy like oyster bar downtown. It's like right on the water and all this kind of stuff like that. And he was like, you know, it used to be kind of like hit or miss and sketchy at times down there. He had dinner with the owners of that restaurant, I guess, a month or two ago. And they're like, it's just bonkers now. It's just like crazy.
I wonder, is it just the gentrification that's happened over the last decade there? Just like, I have several friends that have moved from the Midwest out there. So,
yeah, it could. I mean, that's definitely could be part of it. I think we both know it's the evils of socialism. This is what the future of liberals want is, you know,
this is letting your children read Dr. Seuss from a young age.
What exactly. You know, these people that are living on the streets and they're stealing groceries clearly had a book read to them by a drag queen at some point in their lives. And this is what happens.
This is what you get.
Man.
Yeah,
what
man.
A fucking broken country we live in, Jesus Christ.
I know. I'm glad we get to see all of it in our Toyota Priuses.
Yeah.
I was just in Michigan again, mm-hmm. which is Frankenmuth. I had mm-hmm. never been there. Mm-hmm. Apparently, it's the home of the world's largest Christmas shop. Did you know that? Christmas, it's like uh-huh. Christmas year round, and it's a tourist destination, and it's a very
And let me ask you this: like outside of the world's largest Christmas shop, how many different types of feces were there on the sidewalk?
Surprisingly, zero. But
What? Oh my god, you soft man.
Yeah, no. So I will say, when I was walking around, got a lot of looks. They're just taking it all in.
Uh-huh.
Not too many of us up there, but
mm-hmm. Atheists.
Yeah. Hey man, you don't even believe in Santa Claus.
Yeah.
Go back to your country.
Yeah. Yeah.
Show was fun though. It's in this like, it's a very updated town, so it's like, you know, these towns that are everything's new, but it's made to feel like you're back in like the early 1900s.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like it's ice cream parlors and little trinket shops and
tourist traps that are
tourist traps
trading on a nostalgia for an America that either never existed in the way that they're presenting it, or, you know, hasn't existed for almost 100 years.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. It's crazy. And I didn't know what to expect. And I feel like I've done so many shows in Michigan, like not in the actual cities like Detroit or Ann Arbor, but like these mm-hmm. random towns that mm-hmm. it's just such a wide variety. So I never know what to expect. And I was like, this is an actual put together little touristy thing. It felt like Asheville, North Carolina a little bit. It's like... Mm. Okay. There's just shops everywhere. There's tourists with people looking around. No black people. It's very Asheville. Mm-hmm. so I was right at home.
And, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I was right at home. I did. Oh my God. I did. It's like a theater. It's called Fisher Hall. Mm-hmm. It's like a small little theater, and they filled it up and had a really fun, goofy time. They were surprisingly rowdy for a place that doesn't have a full-time stand-up comedy club. Doesn't it shock you that they don't know how to
they don't know how to act? Yeah,
but it was weird because, like, you know, half the crowd are dressed like what I would think hillbillies are dressed like, and then they're like, the other half of the crowd is like hipstery. There are people with like face masks on during the whole show, and like it was a really, I think that made the show fun. There was kind of like
a good mix.
So I had fun with that.
That's good, man.
Yeah, man. So Michigan's back on the
won you back.
Dwight's good side. Yeah,
okay, that's good. That's
gonna win sideways.
Yeah.
I wonder if they just saw a black dude on the poster and they're like, it's safe. The liberals are like, it's safe to come out.
Maybe.
Hopefully.
Yeah, maybe, man. Yeah, that is wild though. That there, I mean, because I also don't think of like those kind of touristy towns as being a draw for like hipstery type people, but maybe they are. I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe they saw the young kids who have to work there, and that's the only industry is is catering to those tourists, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Also, you know, it's surrounded by like probably four other different small towns that have their own identity and personality. So, you know.
Okay. That's good, man. Well, I'm glad you had a fun one. That was good. Was that your only show last week?
No. And then I went to Memphis, Michigan, which was on a golf course. That was Saturday. And that was like, yeah, those are the rednecks and the people that grew up in the town and never left. And that was just like a glorified bar show that I had a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun. I went
to
see
that for real, or I mean, I guess we have our cameras turned off because I'm on spotty stolen Wi-Fi, so I couldn't tell if there were air quotes there when you said you had a lot of fun on that one.
No air quotes, genuine. Okay. I don't know why. Like, I don't know why I was in such a giddy mood. Maybe because I saw John Wick 4 earlier in the day, and I talked about that for like 10 minutes. They were like, what is this? But I was just having a good old time and they enjoyed the show. I went long, but they didn't care. And then, just talked to some local Memphis, Michigan folk.
Mm-hmm.
There is fucking nothing around here in this town. Like it's insane. Like I've done towns where there's nothing. There's like for miles, there's nothing. If I would have like needed gas, I would have been fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, good thing you got that Prius, baby. Huh?
Yeah. Right. Never need it.
Sponsor shout out to Starbucks and Toyota. Thank you.
Please come through. Oh my God. Yeah. Those two sponsorships would be unstoppable.
Yeah, exactly. You know, all the free coffee and free Wi-Fi and free Priuses.
Free Priuses.
I'd be selling Priuses at my merch table. I don't know. Is Priuses correct or is it Prii? I don't know what the correct pluralization of Prius is.
Toyotas.
I think it's just Toyotas if you're having more than one Toyota. But I mean specifically
you're having more than one Toyota.
Yeah, you're really hungry that day for amazing driving action. If you then check out not just one Toyota, but Toyotas, several.
Several. Oh, I did. Yeah, I got made fun of in Memphis for having the only car that wasn't a pickup truck in the gravel parking lot. So
did you just go 50 miles to the gallon? And
oh,
walk
yeah.
Away?
Mic drop. Yeah, I was like, I can't outrun any of you, but if I can survive 100 miles, you.
Yeah, it's like you outlast them as long as they don't run you off the road, man. You just outlast them. Yeah. Well, those sound like good shows. I know I was like kind of commenting on the worst parts of Portland, but actually there's a lot of good stuff here too. I am here. I have a show tomorrow. I got on, I got a guest spot on Irene 2's show on Sunday at Helium. That's sort of my first show here in Portland, was sold out. It was dope also just to see her because, you know, we're friends and it's always fun to run into your friends on the road.
Yep.
And she crushed it. I mean, absolutely crushed it. And I had a good time up there. I had a solid, you know, little guestie. And but yeah, it was interesting because when I walked into the club, I didn't know there was an earlier matinee show because it was Sunday night. I thought it was the only show. But the first thing I see when I walk in the club is Jeff Tate.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah. And so that's how I discovered that Jeff Tate lives in Portland now. So update to all the Tate heads out there. Wow. Yeah. Cincinnati on and off again, Cincinnati based comic, but mostly been based out of Cincinnati for the last several years. Jeff Tate is now a Portland guy. And he was doing ran into him because they had just finished up All Fantasy Everything with Sean Jordan, who's also back in Portland now. And who I did not recognize for the first, I don't know, 7 or 8 times that he walked by me.
See,
in the green
lost
room.
A lot of weight.
Right? He does not look great. I'll just say, yeah, you're being more. He did lose a lot of weight.
Okay.
Maybe that's it. Maybe he needs to put it back on. I don't know.
Does not look great.
I think all the partying is catching up to him. I mean, he's an old man. He's in his 60s now, yeah. Which is the thing that people forget is that he did not get famous until he was almost 45 maybe, or 40, like,
right,
40, so, which gives me hope, actually. Maybe I need to start smoking weed and talking about it. But
you too can have a movie.
Yeah, but or maybe he's just having a rough night. I don't want to shit him. He's, you know, obviously a very funny guy, but man, he looked rough. He looked rough. And I'm sure people will say that same thing about me on podcasts all the time.
But... Well, real funny you say this when we don't have the cameras turned on, Matt.
Yeah. I look great. I don't know what you're talking about. I've been living out of my car for 8 days. Why wouldn't I look great?
Oh man.
No, but that's what people come Poor to the Doug. Podcast for. Cause like, you know, we just might talk a little shit. You never know.
Yeah.
You know, it falls under the category just might. But yeah. But it's more the thing that's how radically different he looks now. He's lost a lot of weight. His hair is really long now. And I just thought he was, you know,
yeah,
some other person. I thought he was someone who I'd never seen before. I thought
he
was the Babadook for a second. And then no,
that's not great. Have you ever thought that he just wants to fit into Portland, Oregon?
Maybe.
In their new demographic? Doesn't want to look like a tourist?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if Doug looks... I don't know if Doug lives here, too. Maybe he does. I don't know.
Fitting in for the weekend.
Maybe this is their version of Austin. So they're all taking up, like, all picking over Portland scene. I don't know. But, yeah. Anyway, but still, it was lovely to see all those guys, and it was lovely to chop it up. I chopped it up with Sean just for a little bit, but Jeff and I hung out for a bit before our show, which was good to catch up with him. So, shout out to all those comics. You know, and that's the great thing about comedy is you don't have to be good looking. I mean, I know that bookers and TikTok will tell you that you do, but you got chops, and you got in before the great glamification of comedy.
Oh man,
yeah.
Yeah, it used to be you didn't want to be too attractive because it would be distracting.
Yeah.
With all the like books from the comedy Bible and all those other books I read when I was very new.
Yeah, you want to be relatable. You didn't want to be
relatable. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You didn't want to be too Hollywoody. But no, not anymore. We had a good set, and then last night, since my friend's trip got extended back, and my plan was just to go hang with them, so I went and hit up a mic, and it was a mic, it was good, it was solid. The host, I had a lot of respect for the host, Juan Duran, I think I'm saying his name right, is just a cool show that he runs in Vancouver, Washington, and it's a long mic. I didn't stick around for the whole thing because I'm an old man living out of his car, but he had really good energy. The room was really cool. Like, he just, like, it, you know, there's hosts that just know when they have to turn it up a little bit.
Right.
And kind of make things work. And he had that on display. He had the skill set really well. And, you know, and I worked on a couple of new things and mostly went well. I had to follow a white dude who had a pretty racist set about Mexicans, which he was justifying by the fact that his kids are half Mexican. But he was still just saying a bunch of hacky shit about how I don't understand why they don't do the lawn better and shit like that. Just really, really bad. And the room hated him.
Yeah.
You know,
I hate him.
Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't a fan either. But then I went up two comics after him, and I did a bit where I literally just said the word Mexican, and that's where I lost him. As I think I was doing well.
Yeah.
And then I told the story. I don't know if you've seen this, where I tell the story about you were there, the lesbian couple in Arkansas.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So I tell that story now. And I literally just said, you know, one of them was, you know, the one who seemed to be white said, well, she's Mexican and I identify as Mexican. Right.
Nope.
That's the
thing. Yeah.
As soon as I said, they're like, nope. And I was like, this is me dunking on this other white person for being an idiot. And they still were like, we're not going to give you the laughs. And I was like, okay.
They can't see past their instant PTSD, Matt. They're still recovering.
It was on me. I should have known to do a different bit. I should have been like, well, that guy has ruined that word for the rest of the night. Even if you were just like, your entire bit was like, Mexicans are the best and I love them. And, you know, like, you know, they would be like, nope, we don't trust you. We don't trust you, white man.
Yeah, they don't.
Why you'd be saying these things.
They're always waiting for the bottom to fall out.
Yeah, which I mean, in this country, who can blame them?
Yeah. So. Not me, dog, not me. So you did the mic and
I did helium, I did a mic, and then I'm on a show tomorrow called Dough at Mississippi Pizza, which I've done way back in the day when Adam Pozzi ran it, but apparently it's still like one of the hottest shows, so hopefully it'll be good.
Yeah. Did you, so what about the drive from your last stop?
Well, let me jump back. Yeah. I'll go back to like the last episode. I was on my way to Fort Collins to do the Comedy Fort, if I recall correctly. Yeah. That was great. I closed out the Sam Talent and Friends show. It's a new thing he's doing there once a month, which is like a benefit show for various local not-for-profits and charities and stuff. And the one that they were raising money for the night that I was there for was like for an after-school program for at-risk kids, which was great because then I could, you know, talk about all my Boys and Girls Club material and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I found out later talking at the merch table with somebody, which I think this is so hilarious because you don't know what the benefit is until you get there. Apparently the first one that he did, it was the benefit was to raise money to pay off some other comics DUI bills.
Oh my God. That's hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, it was super funny. It was like, that, even now, it just makes me laugh. Like, yeah, it's a charity.
That's that what is we're hilarious.
We're calling this a benefit. But, and, you know, Sam is just so good at what he does. And he hosts the show and he was doing time in between the comics. And like Lizzie Wolfson was on it, who I've been friends with for a minute, and she did great. And Dylan, and I did not catch the other guy's name. I don't remember. I apologize because I never met him before. But it was just a solid show all the way through. I closed it out and did 20. They were great, as they always are at the Comedy Fort.
Yes, sir.
Sam riffing so much got all of us a little looser. I riffed a little bit more than I normally would. But it was great. It was a great way to start it. And then the drive to Boise was marred by inclement weather. I had to just sit in Laramie, Wyoming for about an hour and a half to 2 hours waiting for the interstate to open after the winter storm.
Oh, geez, man.
Yeah. But Boise was dope, man. Tree Fort. I did a post about this, which I don't do this for every festival. I only do it for ones that I mean it. But I posted a thing about, you know, comics. This is one you want to submit to because Tree Fort was really, really great. It was really awesome. The, you know, comedy, it's like South by Southwest, where music and bands is the main thing. And there's a million of them. And it's right. Like all these venues all over downtown. And it's all walkable. But, you know, sometimes you are walking a mile, you know, between venues.
Sure.
So you got to wear the comfy shoes while you do it. But they also have comedy shows and they have tech stuff and literary stuff and a film section. And like, it's just like everything is happening down there. And the comedy shows, man, they were great. Like, the first one I did was packed out. And then I stuck around in that same venue, the Mad Swede, to watch the late show there, the late comedy show there. It packed out. And it is interesting. It was in like this, that festival way where people are running from thing to thing. So literally right before the show would start, you would be like, oh, there's not that many people here. And then by the end of the MC set, it would be full. Because people were filling in.
Love that.
Yeah. And I was seeing that also happen at some band stages that I went to, too, like some smaller band stages, is when the band would start, it'd be me and like four other people. And then by the end of the second song, I turned around. I was like, oh, now there's 100 people here watching this band, you know?
Right.
Oh,
that's did you have any faves? Favorite bands?
Man, I have two. The one that I kind of was expecting to be great, was Godspeed You Black Emperor, which is like this 8-piece instrumental rock band that's, you know, it's just very big and cinematic and heavy. And, you know, those are probably the best words to describe it. But I was talking to Jake Silberman, a great comedian from originally from Portland, but now from New York. He and I both were like, when we saw Godspeed was one of the bands, that's when we submitted to this festival.
Okay.
Because they don't hardly ever tour. Like, this was like their first tour in, I think, like 10 years or something like that.
Right.
So the chance, and I had honestly thought they were done as a band, you know, because they were more of a thing in the 90s and 2000s, I think. And so that was like, but they were amazing. And then I got not dragged, but suggested that I go to a show after the late night comedy show by Shane Torres. A bunch of us joined him at like a honky tonk to see this band from Portland called Jenny Don't and the Spurs,
yeah,
who just ripped. It was like, you know, honky tonk, country, swing, western. But all the players were like hot shit, you know, like just hot shit, man, just like shredding like the entire time. It's super fun. She was great, a great singer, great front person. It was just like, it was amazing. It was like one of the better live shows I've seen in a long, long time.
That's
so
dope.
Those would be the two that I saw. I kept trying to find hip hop shows to go to. They did have some hip hop artists, but it was always like against a comedy show, or at something like, you know, like a 1 p.m. or it was either like 1 a.m. or 1 p.m., you know, and like I've already set up like lunch plans with other comics or something like that, or it's 1 a.m. and I'm not gonna go to a hip hop show at 1 a.m. Like I'm just old, you know.
Come on, Matt.
unless it's like Method Man or somebody like that. I'm like, unless it's like a bucket list, but someone I've never heard of before, I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to this 1 a.m. show. But those are the bands that I saw, and then the comedy was all good, you know. They don't take a ton of comics. There's maybe 20 comics in total who get into this thing.
Okay.
Because you get two shows each. And then there were a couple of mics you could also do. Like there was one, I guess there were three mics you could do. There was one on Wednesday night, which was technically the first night of the festival. There was one on Thursday night, but it was opposite Godspeed, so I didn't do it. I went to the show instead.
Okay.
And then there was a Sunday night kind of closing out the festival one that they do. So you have lots of other opportunities for stage time as well, besides your two shows. But man, it was great. Shane Torres closed out one of my shows and was great and super fun and loose and weird. He wound up running a game show at the end with three people from the audience that he put up on stage. Okay. I don't want to say too much about it because it's such a great premise that I'm assuming it's, yeah, like because he had material about it and he decided to kind of just turn it kind of into a game show.
Okay.
So I don't want to spoil it because it's in his new hour. But that was great. And then trying to think if we had a headline. Matt Besser from Upright Citizens Brigade.
Oh yeah.
Headlined my other one. And it was really funny because I was talking to him a little bit before the show, and this was the packed one at Mad Swede, and he was just like, yeah, you know, they booked me to come and do Improv for Humans, which is the podcast that he does because he's mostly known for improv. He's like, and then they asked me, do I want to do stand up? And I was like, oh, sure. He's like, I didn't know they wanted me to headline and do 20 minutes.
Oh, shit.
But he was fine. He killed the entire time. But it was just like, he was just like, I'm not really a stand up. I don't know why they're having me close out. He's like, I thought I was going to do like a little guest set of stand up, you know?
Nah, man, we want you up there for the whole 20 minutes, please.
He's big name, dude. Big name.
Yeah, I get it.
And Boise is a really cool town. It's like, it's beautiful. It was all in all a great experience. It's one of those things that it's a festival I would do every year, probably if they would have me, but also they take so few comics that I don't want to like log jam it. And I think they're probably Dylan, who runs the whole thing, Dylan Haas, shout out to him. Did a great job with his team. And I think he's also smart enough to know that he needs to rotate it around and
keep it
fresh. But I saw some old friends that were in the mix on that one. I hung out quite a bit with Bailey Pope from New York. Jake Silberman and I were chopping it up. Shane, it was good, you know. Lee Robinson from Denver. I would qualify them as a new friend, but our orbits seem to be kind of like overlapping a lot, you know, in the last year or two. And so I'm definitely becoming fond of them quite a bit. They had probably my favorite comedy set of the entire show, entire festival, because they did do a comedy brunch thing in a tent, where then there was a band playing on like an outdoor stage, I don't know, like a couple hundred meters away. So there was like this bleed over of sound and they're in a tent and it's like noon, right?
Okay.
And not ideal comedy situations. People came out for it, filled up the tent pretty well, but everyone is standing pretty far back away from the stage. And Lee was just like, we're not doing that. They just came off the stage with the long mic cable and came into the crowd and did like the first couple minutes and just like basically just seized the energy. Is like, nope, we're going to do it like this. And then made everybody move up to the stage before they would get back up on the stage. I don't think they ever even got back up on the stage. I think then they just paced around in front of the stage. But basically turned it away from like being just like we're laughing in the back of this tent, but then there's a 20-foot gap between us and the comic, you know?
Right.
And they just were like, they just seized it. So I thought love it was that. Really great. Yeah.
Pros. I love it when like professionals get in there and take shit over. It's like, this makes the most sense to do it this way. And, you know, let's just do what makes sense.
Yeah. Both my sets went well. I felt good about both of my sets that I did there. And then, so in addition, I mean, it's kind of weird to kind of play favorites because I genuinely liked just about everybody that I saw on the shows. You know, there were a couple I'm like, yeah, it's not really my thing or whatever, or maybe weren't quite as seasoned as some of the other people. You know, if I was really starting to nitpick,
right,
I could do that. And the Patreon listeners, they'll hear those names. But
yeah, we get juicy over there.
No,
Doug Benson took some L's.
Yeah.
Sign up for that Patreon.
No, but I do want to give another shout out to both Zach Peterson and Jake Silverman, because I always love watching those guys, and they both had sets that I enjoyed. So, yeah, that was my festival experience. And then I drove to Portland, Oregon. I did that guest spot on the Irene 2 show, sold out at Helium. And
The so tour de homies, man.
Yeah, it's been good, man. And we'll see what Tacoma holds for me, and then Alaska. So, yeah.
Yeah, this is just, since you mentioned it, give the people your upcoming shows. We'll just do that here before we get into the question.
Tacoma and Alaska.
Is that this week?
I just did it. No,
you're flying, right?
Yeah, well, I'm flying to Alaska. So yeah, we'll do our upcoming dates now for all those people who skipped the end of the podcast and don't want to hear it. Too bad. Now you got to listen to it. So on the day that this will post, on the 29th, I will still be in Portland. I'll be performing on Dough at Mississippi Pizza. That's always a fun one. And then on Thursday, March 30th, I am headlining the Tacoma Comedy Club. I'm also headlining a Saturday brunch show for them on April 1st. And then on Friday 31st and April 1st at nighttime, I'll be featuring at the Tacoma Comedy Club for Kyle Dunnigan, who I've heard good things about. And then after that, I'm in Alaska for the Alaska Before You Die Festival. My shows are on April 6th and April 7th. And then, I'm back home, and then I'm driving, I'm back in the lower 48, driving back home and doing some shows across the country to get back home. But I'll talk about those in a future episode of the podcast.
My man.
What about you? What do you got going on?
I am at Wiley's Comedy Club this weekend. That is March 31st and April 1st. Two shows on April 1st. So if you're in Dayton, come out to those. And then the next week, I'm at Teehee's in Iowa and Des Moines. That is April 7th. Got two shows. So it'll be my first time in Des Moines. I'm looking forward to it. Never been.
Now, are you doing Des Moines with Brent?
No, I just saw that he's there.
Also in Des Moines that weekend. I know. Yeah, yeah.
I just texted him.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's just very funny.
That talking about that weekend though of April 7th, it does remind me, and this is a good thing to talk about in the podcast too, about it's important to pay it forward when you can. And I had texted you to see if you were free that weekend, because I got offered a I'll just go ahead and share the details, I guess. I got offered to open for Kevin Nealon at a big theater show up in Carmel, and I couldn't do it because I'll still be in Alaska. And so then they were like, well, do you have any referrals, anybody? And it was if all my comic friends are listening to this who were like, I didn't get referred, it was very specific. They wanted somebody who could work 15 minutes PG clean, and so that eliminates just about everybody I know. But I did, so I sent out some texts to people like you and Brent and some other people like, hey, are you available on this day? A lot of people were not available because it was such a short turnaround. But I was able to refer two friends of ours, not just for that show, but then also for the night before. I guess he's going to be in Fort Wayne. And so I was able to hook up two comics who, are really good comics and that I know they can do the job and not embarrass me, since I put my name behind them.
Right.
I was able to put some cash in their pocket and big shows. And it's important to do that,
That's sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. It's I would say a necessity in this. It's it is paying it forward, because you don't get to any level ahead of open mic every couple of months without someone helping you. So definitely, if you're in a position, do that shit.
Yeah. And you should do it joyously too. That's the other thing, is like, I was stoked for them, particularly like one of the people who got the gig, one of the gigs, hasn't, I don't think has ever done a show that big before. And so that's exciting. Right.
Right.
It's like, hell yeah. Like, that person's going to get to do this cool thing now. And I had I don't want to say I had a hand in it, but I mean, I didn't cock block them, I'd be like, well, if I can't do it, fuck them, like that kind of attitude that so many comics have,
Hate a cock block.
Yeah.
Hate a cock block. Yeah, I mean, it's, we've mentioned this before. Don't make it a competition between you and your peers unless it's like a healthy one. Don't like root for them not to work or like not get gigs. There's plenty of stuff for everyone. And it's just, it's bad karma if you believe in that thing. And it's just being a shitty human being, which is verifiably accurate. So
yeah,
there just needs to be more cool people in comedy, the less ego, to lift each other up. You know, this is, it's a little outrageous. I'm ranting.
No, it's okay. No, it's good. But also there's two other things about it that I wanted to touch on before we moved on, because I think this does open up a good topic. One that we've talked about several times, but another one that we maybe haven't as much. One of the people that I recommended was like, oh, I haven't been taking the advice of the podcast. I don't have a fresh clip ready. And I was like, well, I'm about to refer you for this thing. So you need to spend the next hour or two finding a clip where you are being clean, right? That's what they're looking for. And so, you know, we talk about the importance of having a good clip and being ready, because again, like not just for things that you know are coming up, like festival submissions and stuff, but opportunities like this that fall in your lap, you should be ready to go with something like that. But also, even if you don't consider yourself a clean comic, if you can do 15 minutes clean, get a clip of you doing 15 minutes clean.
Yeah.
And for most comics, honestly, all it is them taking the word fuck out of the joke.
Yeah.
You know, or shit or whatever curse word. It's like most comics that we know, material is more or less clean. It's just how they do it may or may not be, or like at least not consistently all the way through. And, you know, not saying you have to be a clean comedian and write specifically for that, but having different gears that you can work in is great, you know. And I'll go the other direction. When I got asked to close out like the Dirty Show at the Louisville Comedy Club, you know, I had to go back in the catalog, but I had enough. I could put together 20 minutes of dick jokes. I was like, all right, I got them. Let me go through the old albums and organize them into a set. But, you know, even though that's not something that I'm particularly interested in working in. Now, I mean, you know, I'm still writing sex jokes here and there, but it's not something I'm chasing after, you know, to be like a filthy comic.
Getting the good clip isn't about changing who you are as a comedian. It's like you said, materially, it's really not that different than what you probably already have. If you're getting referred to these, it's like, can we just get this on tape without the swearing or without the... Even if you have to like take out, there was a joke where I have to take out a tag, but I use it in my clean clip. It's my Wendy's joke that I wrote very early on, but it's just taking out fuck and taking out a tag and just switching some words around.
Right.
It's not really, it's not earth shattering. it's not like breaking up the joke or taking away from the joke. It's just, all right, these people don't want to hear curse words. I'm not going to try to stand on my laurels and be like, well, this is the way the joke goes. I got to say fuck and now, fuck you.
Now, there are some jokes, because I've tried to do this before, where I've tried to replace, I think it was the word fuck or fucking or something like that. It's the story about the Airbnb where I say the phrase murder fucking. Tried to do murder banging, murder sex, and it will work murder okay sex. With them, but it just, you know, it still has the basic spirit of it, but it still is a noticeable drop off in that, right? But that's also an entire joke about sex, and so I wouldn't be doing it in a clean set anyway.
Like, wait a second.
But I did tinker around with like maybe if I just soften the language of it somehow, and there is that. But also another thing back to the clips too is like, once you have, you know, once you're featuring, so you got a solid 30, and probably even more than that if you're featuring regularly, having like different types of clips for what you want is important. Not just like a clean clip and like a more like quote unquote club clip, right, where you are cursing it or whatever, but also like really thinking about like when I submit the stuff, when I chopped up my last hour, the video of it, I made a couple of different clips, and there's a section in the middle where I'm going pretty far lefty liberal politics stuff.
Yep.
That's its own, I think, like 8-minute long clip now. There's other stuff that's just more like, easygoing jokes about me. Like, if I'm submitting to a festival that is lefty or a city that, you know, or an independent showcase show that's very, you know, very wears it on its sleeve what its politics are,
right,
I'm sending them the political shit to be like, yep, I'm one of you, here's all my jokes where I'm showing my you know, my liberal cred, you
100%.
Know and then I'm not sending that to the fucking redneck bar show. Now yeah. I might still do those jokes when I get there and do the show. I might still slip a couple of those in if I'm feeling like it. But to get the actual booking
makes sense, man. Like, yeah. I don't tell everyone I write for the Bob and Tom show. That's going to work against me in some places.
I really thought that was going to be like, fault. I don't tell everyone that I'm black, but
I don't send a headshot to everybody. I look through their comedy club website and then I do the math. And then I send a guilt letter. I noticed that from June to September, you didn't have a lot of melanin on your calendar.
Oh man, you just opened up a whole other worm here, the whole of the can of worms of topics, because we do know comics who have posted publicly about a club.
Yeah.
You know, whether it be about their booking racially or gender wise. And do you think that's ever a good strategy? I understand sometimes you just get too frustrated or whatever, but
yeah,
like putting a club on blast doesn't ever seem like a good way to A, get yourself booked, but also B, fix the problem, you know?
As someone who's done this more than once, I could not advise against it enough.
Crackers was outside.
You take a deep breath. Oh, man. Yeah, I did it at two of my home clubs. I did it at Crackers. I did it at Helium. And I apologize for neither.
Okay, let's back up. For the Crackers one, it wasn't about their booking. It was about the fact that the owner had said the N-word, right?
Amongst other things.
Amongst other things. But was it the fact banned. Okay. So then you're like, fuck it. Why not anyway?
Yeah. I was already banned. So that wasn't. I had posted about them banning me for getting a picture with Dave Chappelle publicly.
They banned you for getting because you weren't supposed to be working the other club.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And then the Helium thing was about who they were booking that gotcha. I got upset about. And then it's not Avery's fault from Helium Indianapolis that they booked these people. But I decided to go. I went full Jack Daniels think piece on Facebook, and I do feel that way, but I didn't have to become the martyr in the game of who gets booked at Helium Indianapolis, because still gets booked, you know what I mean? Yeah,
and it was about a specific person, not a general booking practice. Right. I guess in some ways you could say it might be a little bit of a booking practice, but yeah, I think the thing with that it's kind of a no-win situation, because you want to be like, yeah, that is fucked up. You guys should not be booking predators, you know, yeah. who have several allegations against them and things like that. But also, I don't know. It's such a slippery slope, because it's like, as we've said before on here, like, we do have to, this is our jobs. We do try to eat, you know?
Right.
And there's also the other thing of like, well, if all of us who aren't predators and who, you know, maybe have more progressive thoughts, you know, along the lines of the fact that women are people and should be treated as such.
I'll edit that out.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, you misspoke.
but there is an important thing of like, those voices need to be heard on those stages. I remember there was a controversy when Louis C.K. started touring again. He was going to Acme, and there was a local female comic. You know, there's a lot of pressure on all the comics that worked Acme on the local level and like host yep. or feature level to like boycott the club of it. And then she's like, no, she's yeah. like, it's already hard enough for a woman in comedy. And I worked very hard to get this spot, and I'm going to go up there and not be Louis C.K.
Right.
She's like, you want me to just pull all my shit from this club because they're booking him on some other random weekend, you know, that I'm not on. It's like, no, I'm going to go up and I'm going to talk about, you know, feminism and what it's like to be, you know, a woman today. You know, like, there is a very valid argument in that too, that those voices need to remain in those spaces, or else you just wind up with an anti-woke comedy club where you have to scan your face before you go in. So
I get it. If you want to like blast off on social media, I understand you're in a platform where you are encouraged to express yourself. So you want to do that in like every aspect of your life. I just, as someone who has like regretted doing it in a public forum, because you're just posting to your friends and you know, you tag the comedy club and it's just like, what got accomplished outside of me not being able to work there for, you know, a year and a half.
Well, yeah. I think there's also too, is like being realistic about how much influence and power you have. It's a different thing if you were Jim Gaffigan, or someone who has a lot of pull and a lot of clout, because you're going to sell out that room, you know, six shows every single time that you come. If you were like, yo, this is fucked up, y'all shouldn't be booking that guy. If you continue to book him, I'm not going to work your club anymore. That's legitimate because you have power. But like, for guys like us, we have zero power.
It was just me. It was BOGO on Saturday night, late show. Paper the room.
Paper the room. And somehow we still didn't get anybody in. And damn. But they did return all the free tickets. They threw them in the front of the club.
You know what's funny about that is, like, I was making fun of myself, but I was before that, I would make fun of, there's this comic in Indianapolis that had a very public feud with Bob and Tom, the Bob and Tom show, because they would not book him. And so he just went on a Twitter rampage against Bob and Tom, calling himself the funniest person to ever live in Indianapolis and all this other shit, like 20 tweets to no response.
Yeah. That's always a good look.
It's always a good, it's just like, he's like last chance to book the next darn comedy. And it's just like, I wish it was the Twitter now where you can see like how many people saw the tweet.
Yeah.
Be like four.
Yeah. And yeah. Then, and do you think that he's talking about that in his new comedy class that he's teaching?
Oh, good call. Good call. Yeah.
Like, here's the steps to succeed in comedy. One, burn every bridge before you cross it. Like, the minute you see a bridge, set it on fire.
Oh, that's like, this is an extreme example, but that's, if I just got on Facebook right now, I was like, fuck Jimmy Fallon and fuck The Tonight Show. Last chance.
Yeah. That would be but that is pretty much exactly what it was.
I don't think it would make it to Fallon.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd get a response.
Speaking of responses, do you want to respond to this week's question of the week?
Let's get it.
All right, this came into us by Mr. Jonathan Handcuff. It's interesting. I know a guy named John Handcuff. This comes from John Handcuff. His email is just more formal for some reason. And so for those of you who don't know, John is a Bloomington-based comedian. And actually, this isn't one of those interesting things where in some ways I'm the senior most comic in Bloomington because I've just been doing it the longest. Everybody else who started before me moved away. With the exception of John started the week after I started, but it was him coming back to comedy because he had actually done it when he was in college at IU. He's been kind enough to actually show us all his like submission VHS.
That's funny.
Like the 90s.
That's funny.
A young man with floppy hair and big shoulder pads. And it's a delight. It's a delight. And hopefully he will release that as a full special sometime soon on YouTube. But yeah, John's been in the mix for a long time there in Bloomington comedy. Very funny comic. His question to the podcast is, which movie and or TV show do you feel most and least accurately depicts stand-up comedy?
Okay. Now,
this is something that does get shown quite a bit. Not a lot, but I mean, maybe we just notice it more because we are comics. Like I was just watching I think it was an old rerun of like, It was Law and Order or something. Every now and then there's an episode of Law and Order where a comedian kills their spouse or gets killed or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it is out there in the zeitgeist as far as like a plot device for right. long running series that are running out of ideas, you know? So like,
yeah, I'd say most accurate is the Joker.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah,
call back to a question about sad clowns that do comedy earlier this season.
The phrase was broken people.
Broken people. Not normies or whatever the
yeah
hell it was.
Well, let's just kind of like think of the ones that we can think of, and then we'll talk about how. So there's the Joker, obviously. And the Joker is basically almost a remake of the King of Comedy.
Right.
Which is with the Robert De Niro film,
yeah,
with Sandra Bernhard. And then there's also, you know, there's obviously the Birbiglia stuff.
I think about, it's not about, this isn't about stand-up, but I think about that scene from Nutty Professor a lot. About like, yeah. Of like, it's Chappelle and it's Eddie Murphy, and Chappelle's the hacky stand-up comic. Women be shopping. You can't stop a woman from shopping. And he's got the 90s black club comic thing going on. And I was like, that was so real to me at the time because all I watched was 90s Def Comedy Jam and Comic View. And it was like the same recycled jokes. And he's talking about your mama.
Mm-hmm.
So that's real for me. I don't know if that holds up today, but
well, I mean, his bombing still feels very real.
he was crushing.
Yeah,
Mama so fat, got to put on a belt with a boomerang. I had to pause the DVD. I was laughing so hard.
Now, do you think Chappelle wrote that, or do you think that it was written already by Eddie Murphy? Wrote the scripts, right?
Yeah, and then listening to interviews, they were just kind of riffing. But that's like a
Interviews. Do you have the Criterion collection of the Nutty Professor movies? Do you have like all the extras?
We can do an episode about the amount of DVDs I rented from Blockbuster that had like the DVD, the editor cut, and the extras, So
all right, okay, but okay, good.
I just watched. Do you watch the show Accused?
Do not.
It's like a.
Sounds funny.
It's super funny. They just did an episode with a stand up where like Whitney Cummings stars in it as a try like an up and coming comedian, and she's trying to get spots, and then she's at a party and she asks an old friend who's kind of like hitting it big, and he ends up sexually assaulting her. And I was like, this feels real.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say it's so was Louis credited in this?
I could not stop thinking about Chris D'Elia. I was like, God damn.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, you do see like depictions of comedians, and it's always like I don't know. I guess Top Five wasn't as sad, but he was still going through some shit. Top Five with Chris Rock.
Yeah.
Where he's a successful comedian and they talk about their favorite hip hop artists.
Mm-hmm.
Did you watch this?
I've not seen Top Five. I've always wanted to see it, but yeah. I did not see it.
Just like comics sitting around talking shit, and he had like every famous comedian in the world, just like Kevin Hart's in there, JB Smooth, every black comedian, I guess. Tracy Morgan, and it's like, yeah, comics just sit around and drink shit and talk shit.
Also, Brian Regan. Don't forget about Brian Regan. Yeah. I did know that Brian Regan's in that movie, and everybody's like, oh, that's interesting. All right.
Yeah. So is Seinfeld.
Yep. Okay. That's good. All right. So, I was going to say the Seinfeld documentary doesn't count because it's a documentary, the comedian documentary. So I did pull up a list here of 12 movies that explore the world of stand-up comedy from The Hollywood Reporter. So we do have... King of Comedy, we've got Punchline with Sally Fields and Tommy Hanks. I'm also going to just stick to fictional stuff because there's also the Dustin Hoffman movie where he is Lenny Bruce. We're not going to do that because it's sort of an autobiography, really, or biography, I should say. There's a movie called This Is My Life by Nora Ephron, which I've never heard of before, which is someone is a Julie Kavner is a struggling comic. blah, 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 blah. Mr. Saturday Night with Billy Crystal, which doesn't really, that doesn't feel like it's accurate because it's more about like old timey shit.
Yeah.
There's Funny People, the Judd Apatow film, Funny
That's
People.
That's right, with Sandler.
Yeah. We got Sleepwalk With Me, the Birbiglia thing, which is, I guess, also kind of autobiographical, but there is a lot of about his life as a stand-up, which I feel is highly fictionalized in that. I will say that the first thing I thought of with this question was Sleepwalk With Me, because like literally he, like after his like second open mic, he's on the road doing road shows. And it's like, are you?
Yeah.
Did you get that college booking after your second open mic?
That was what's the Pete Holmes show?
The same thing with Crashing. Yeah.
Crashing.
And I understand with Crashing, it's used, but also by the end of the season one of Crashing, you know, he's just kind of getting shoved around from different people's couch to different people's couch. And I think that's also very accurate where, you know, he gets a lot of breaks because he could drive Artie Lang to the gig.
Right.
Like a comic needed something from him, you know? And so we'll let him open. But at least by the end of season one, he's not like headlining. I mean, he's still doing like barking for the shows where he's handing out the flyers and it's still like a shit show.
Yeah, that's real.
That was a very realistic one. But the Birbiglia one, and I don't know if it's because it's a film and he thought he had to get through it quicker, but it literally shows him do like his first or second open mic. And then the next thing we see is, and there's no like 6 months later, it's literally just acts like it's the next week. He's on the road. There's Obvious Child, which I did not watch. I don't watch a lot of movies with Jenny Slate. There's Top Five. There's The Comedian with Robert De Niro. Did you watch this?
I did not watch that one.
Yeah, me either.
I did not watch it. Yeah. Did you watch Miss Maisel, Marvelous Miss Maisel?
No, I thought all the trailers looked annoying as fuck.
Okay.
I've heard it's really good, but I think it was just something about the over-the-top brashness of it.
Man, I am annoyed as fuck.
It just felt a little annoying to me.
Yeah.
Maybe the character itself felt a little annoying. And yeah, I don't know. I'm sure it's good. I'm sure it's great. I'm sure it's good. It's won a lot of awards. I love Alex Borenstein. I think she's great. But
I watched season one and I enjoyed it a lot. And then I don't know why I didn't go back. I have no reason not to have gone back. I did enjoy season one. There's a Lenny Bruce thing in there, you know, cause it's during that time period. And I think it just inserts her
into historical elements. And,
yeah. So, I don't know. I got to go back and give that a look. I don't always love the depiction of stand-up on screen by actors that aren't stand-up.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's kind of why I didn't watch the De Niro thing, if I was going to be honest. I like De Niro. I don't want to be annoyed.
Disappointed by that. Well, rounding out this list is My Name is Dolomite, which again is more of an a biography, biopic. But then there's like The Big Sick with Kamail and his wife, Emily, someone portraying his wife, Emily, going through that whole thing.
It's a great movie.
Yeah, it's a great movie. And I just wish he was more jacked during it.
I wish he could be called a MCU superhero.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, yeah, like struggle with dating.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Somebody heckles him, he can shoot one of his like finger lasers at them. I remember the stand-up and that being pretty accurate too. Honestly, I remember it being like the stand-up portion, which obviously he is a stand-up, and there's the rest of the cast for the stand-up portions are stand-ups. It's Kurt Braunohler and people like that. So I feel like that one is pretty accurate. You know, surprisingly, one that's not on this list because it's a little bit of an obscure movie, but I would say that the stand-up, which is, there's not a lot of it, but the stand-up in Mad Dog and Glory is pretty accurate. And have you ever seen this movie?
It's
Bill Murray and Robert De Niro again and Uma Thurman. And in this interesting sort of role reversal, Robert De Niro plays sort of like the meek, shy, timid kind of guy. And he winds up becoming friends with Bill Murray, who is a gangster. He's like a mob guy. But Bill Murray's like, he wants to be a stand-up. And so he's doing these open mics. And they show a couple of them and he just eats shit. He's like terrible. He's bad at it. But I remember like the feeling, like watching it again. I remember watching it as a kid or a younger person and being into the movie because it's just kind of a weird, interesting movie. But then also like seeing it again after I'd been doing stand-up, I was like, yeah, that part of it is somewhat accurate. Like,
right.
The audience reaction is pretty where it needs to be. And his also sort of delusion about his material. And of course he's a mob guy. So he's got all these mob guys telling him, it's great. These people don't know what they're, and De Niro's the only one who's being honest with them about the material.
Gotcha.
It was pretty good. So that I felt like those are ones that are somewhat accurate, with the exception of the ones where they immediately are vaulted to success instantaneously without even having a TikTok. I don't think so.
You know, those are coming.
Yeah, the TikTok movies.
Yeah, the TikTok movies are coming. Man, yeah, I don't typically, I like comedy documentaries
mm-hmm.
a lot more than I like depictions of a stand-up comic trying to make it.
Yeah. Oh, I just remembered what it was that I saw. That it wasn't a heavy show like Law and Order, although I have definitely seen that episode of Law and Order where Larry Miller, who is a stand-up comic and also an actor, plays a stand-up comic who I think murders his wife or something like that. But no, I was watching reruns of Bones. Did you ever watch Bones?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So there's an episode where I don't even know how they get to this, but David Boreanaz, his character, the FBI agent, he has to go do stand up at a club, has to go do an open mic. And the psychologist Sweets had written some jokes for him, and none of those jokes work. But then when Boreanaz just talks about shooting people, he starts crushing.
Oh my goodness.
At this open mic. So that's fun, huh? Yeah.
Took place in Battle Creek, Michigan. that's hilarious. Yeah, we're always shown as like, we're shown worse than like post office workers, where they like, you go postal. If a stand-up comedian is in a TV show, they're going to kill someone.
They're going to kill someone, or they're going to be like sad losers, or yeah. I'm trying to think if there's ever been a depiction of like, oh no, they're just like a normal, healthy human being who sleeps in his car for 8 days, you know?
Nope, but you know, we can pitch it.
Yeah. I don't know. This makes me, well, part of me wants to say, this makes me want to watch all these movies to see how they get it right. But I'm also with you. If I'm going to watch anything about stand-up, I think I'm more interested in a documentary than I am anything that's fictionalized.
You know,
in the thing that I do. So in the same way that I'm not that interested in fictionalized TV shows or films about rock stars in the music world, since I was from that world,
right.
You know, the thing is, the reason that Almost Famous is so good is because it's so over the top and kind of cartoonish and such just a good movie in all these other ways that it doesn't matter how accurate the music part of it is.
I like,
you know,
yeah, I like that. I like that. If you're going to portray comedians, either don't toe the line, either make them look unhinged like Aziz and Funny People.
Mm-hmm.
We
skipped right over Funny People. We should talk about the accuracy of Funny People and whether or not. And also, I would say with that, also, Don't Think Twice, the Birbiglia film about improv, I thought was brilliant. I thought it was great. And I don't come from the world of improv, but the basic ideas of jealousy and all of that are at play, and wondering if you're never going to make it, and if you're past your prime, and you know, all of that was at play in that movie, I thought were very translatable to stand up, and I thought he did a great job in that one. So, but what about Funny People? Do you think it's accurate or inaccurate?
Yeah, it's like, so a lot of these movies come from where it's either the comic is like mega super famous, or like, you know, they have this life that I can't identify with, but something pulls them back down to the drudges, where they have to go back to the goddamn comedy club, and they get out of the theater and they find, in this case, it's like Adam Sandler finds Seth Rogen, who's trying to up and come and make him more, make himself more relatable. And he's also like having this traumatic experience. And I think the way that he deals with that through comedy was very relatable to me. Otherwise it's just like, oh, Moneybags is going through some shit, and it's very hard for me to get on board with that. But I like the auxiliary like comedians around. I like seeing accurate depictions of how comedians interact with each other. And this is easy if you have a movie full of comics.
Right.
You can just really hit play and just let them go.
Yeah. And then also the fact that, you know, Apatow came from that world. He was also originally a stand-up, you know, like people forget that he's on an HBO Young Comic special. Like that was his path as he was out there trying to be a stand-up too, living with, you know, Sandler, which is of course where they have all those early footage things of the two of them together.
Right.
That they put into the film. Yeah. I think there's a couple that we've skipped over, like Hacks, I know is apparently very accurate, but I've not seen that. Again, we're coming back to the fact that I don't watch a lot of shit.
I love Hacks. I do love that show.
You think it's almost accurate?
Once again, a ultra wealthy person is met by a person trying to make it. Mm. And so I don't know if it's accurate or not. I don't I don't know any like
ultra wealthy comics that have helped you out.
Yeah, like not at that level, but mm-hmm. I think it's very funny. I think the way that the writing is portrayed on the show is accurate.
Mm-hmm.
That it's like hard work and sometimes it doesn't work out and that shit hurts. That is shown accurately on the show, but it's like it's either you're starting from scratch or we're meeting these people at like the best parts of their life and then something bad happens to them.
Right. So it's either rags to riches or riches to rags is the driving conflict in the stories. Now, I know that I've made a joke or two about Louis because he's an easy punchline when we're talking about sexual predators and things like that. But I will say his TV show, I think was fantastic. It was mm-hmm. absolutely fantastic. It was a work of art. Obviously he's a comic, so he's going to get all the stand-up parts right.
Right.
But in particular, I want to like bring up the Doug Stanhope episode where Doug Stanhope plays an old friend of his who they came up with the mics together, who is like the down on his luck, $200 a night living out of his car comic.
Yep.
You know, and even on weeks that I'm not living out of my car, I found that episode, not just because Doug kills it. I mean, he's so compelling in it as like kind of a fictionalized version of himself. He's like, you know, this booze hound, like dirt bag, like loser kind of dude or whatever, which is sort of the persona that people have of Doug. But his acting is great in it. And him convincing Louis to kind of go do these shitty mics with him around New York one last time, I thought was really interesting and compelling and very accurate. And also his life is very accurate because, you know, there are a lot of comics that don't have a wife with a good job.
Yeah.
You know, who are all in and they do chase this and they do live out of their car and they do just chase those bar gigs to bar gigs, you know, all over the country or just in their region or whatever. And that life is a hard life. And there's a lot of casualties from that life, you know?
Yeah, man.
And there's a lot of people that choose that life because they're fucked up in some other way to where they can't hold down a real job or they're just unwilling to, you know? And they make it to Portland and they poop on the sidewalk, you know? And that's what they do. So I thought that episode in particular, I thought was really, really strong. And I think about it sometimes, you know, from time to time.
I love that. Yeah, I didn't really watch the show like every week. I got off of Louis pretty early. I watched his like first couple specials and I enjoyed them. And then he said the N-word and I was like, I don't know if I
and then his artistic endeavors.
And then everything else. And then I was like, I mean, yeah, it's undoubtedly great. I think that's why he has this army of, I think they're called Louis Bros, that just can't grapple with that. Sometimes he does really terrible shit to people.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, for me, it was like a separating the art from the artist thing where I'm not saying it's worth it. I'm not saying that show is worth it to his victims. But there is, I think, you know, in a vacuum, if you just look at them as pieces of art, then they're, I think they're very strong. That, and I may have mentioned this before on the podcast, there's a 3-episode arc where he tries to get the Letterman show that I think is one of the most accurate depictions of like longing and trying to work hard and try to, you know, basically get over that next level and that hurdle of believing in yourself and trying to put in the work to do it. I think it, like that's those three episodes, I think, are genius too. But yeah, it's obviously it gets very complicated whenever you talk about someone's work like that, you know, like whether it be like Annie Hall with Woody Allen.
You're right.
Anything like if you just
Cosby had, show.
You're Cosby like, show. Oh, I know. And yeah, how great was the Cosby show? And now you're kind of like, and I feel bad talking about how great it was.
I never laughed.
Yeah,
not a single episode.
Oh, you're gonna lip sync coming down the stairs? Yeah. Fuck you, you know.
Bill Cosby himself is one of the worst stand-up comedy specials of all time.
Yeah. Anyway, as usual, I don't think we answered the question. We just kind of talked around it for a while, but that's what we do here on the podcast.
Thanks for stumping us, John.
Yeah, I guess I need to watch more things. I would love to hear from people on what they think are the most accurate or least accurate depictions of stand-up in mass media. Send that to the email account, and we will read them on a future episode. We'll touch back on this topic. You can email us at mattanddwight@gmail.com. That is mattanddwight@gmail.com. Send us anything that you think about that as far as really, really good depictions or laughably bad ones. I would love to read about them and then check them out. Try to find them on YouTube and we can revisit this. Or if you just have a question of your own, you don't have to piggyback on John's. You could be your own person. You can send us your own question to that same email address and we'll do our best to not answer it on a future episode of the podcast.
I love that. Thank you guys so much for listening. Don't be a hydrate, moisturize. Don't poop on the sidewalk. Take care of each other.
I don't know why you had to bring it back to that. I was kind of regretting seeing it in the first place.